prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Gentlemen, I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I am here with my co-host, Alfred Addisk, to bring you opinion and our commentary on today's economic and political events for Tuesday, June 3rd, 2014. Thank you for joining us this afternoon, Alfred.
Well, it's my pleasure, Melody.
What a day.
Mm-hmm. Gold is up $2.90. Yeah.
$1,246. You have silver up a little few pennies today, 0.05 at 1892. Platinum down 5 at 1,436. And palladium was up 7 at $841. The USDX today was trading slightly lower, 0.08, although it was lower on the day, but it is coming back here in late afternoon trade, 80.55. Crude oil still trending, 102.76. And the paper markets today, the Dow is down 21 points at 16,722. The S&P basically unchanged for the day, down 0.74, but at 1924. So the big breaking news, the winning streaks end for the Dow and the S&P. You know, it just makes me laugh. It's so disgusting. And the NASDAQ was down 3 at 42.34, along with the 10-year yield up again, 2.59%, up 0.06. There you have it in a nutshell, Al.
Well, I'll tell you what a judge told me one time. I mentioned the nutshell, and he says, if the shell fits, wear it. Which I thought was, it just left me, I couldn't think of a thing to say. I was just, damn, that was clever. So, all right, so if the shell fits, wear it. And for those of you like nutshells, Melody, do you have a special today where you're going to, perhaps we could pass out a nutshell?
We can do that.
An order?
Yeah, we can do that. Include a nutshell with every trade, along with a one-ounce silver eagle with every trade. But
see if they fit.
There was some interesting news that came out today, the report on sales for automobiles for last month. Automakers said the sales rose 11% to just over 1.6 million in May. And this was the highest monthly total since July 2005. May's sales were driven by pent-up demand from the winter, he said, but and this guy, he said, was the Kelley Blue Book. The summer months will likely be strong because of other factors, including low interest rates, good lease deals, and enticing new vehicles. Well, I'll tell you what. I remember the last time we were heading into the big boom, and number one, it was all, I don't know where these people are coming up with money, except that I'm thinking of bad loans. We've already read information and reported on people that are lagging in their auto loans. They can't make the payments. So again, these are subprime lenders that are buying vehicles. And the dealerships, the automotive industry, is giving them away with incentives, incentives, incentives. No down payment, free monthly payments, and all kinds of gimmicks in order to get people in there to buy. And this is exactly what had happened before. Zero rates and all kinds of things in order to get people to buy. But Hyundai, Kia, and Honda had the biggest increases in incentives in May. Chrysler, GM, Nissan offered fewer deals. GM said May was its best month. Now, this is GM, so that it was its best month since August of 2008. Sales of its GMC Yukon and Buick Encore SUVs more than doubled, and buyers snapped up the new Chevy Corvette. GMC Sierra pickup sales gained 14%. Are you there, Alfred?
Yeah, I'm here.
It's kind of hard to buy those numbers. Those are big, strong numbers for when we talk about the economy and we see all the changes and the difficulties and the prices of food rising to the degree. It's kind of hard to figure out where people are coming up with the higher payments of automobiles. Automobile prices certainly aren't going down. It's not like you had a GM Sierra pickup drop from $30,000 down to $20,000 and $15,000. So,
well, it's hard to say, but I think what drives it are inexpensive loan rates, and that's the automobile business is absolutely sensitive to what are interest rates on loans. And so far as they remain low, confidence is rising. Loans are comparatively inexpensive. You can afford it. And it's not like they're buying homes. Real comparatively, the value of the car is perhaps 10% of the value of a home people might be looking at.
Well, I think also with the stock market hitting highs, you have that confidence. People feel confident in their pensions and their retirements, and they feel that they can go out and splurge. I don't know what's going to happen if and when the markets turn around and all of a sudden they're put in the same position as they were as in 2009, and they're saying, uh-oh.
Well, the presumption is that people are buying this stuff because they're confident. But on the other hand, it might be that they've just reached a point where they figure, eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we may die. Maybe they have no confidence at all. They're just figuring, I'm going to get a car while I still have a chance to get one.
I can't take it with me.
That's the truth of the matter, but we're going to just party, 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 because it's tomorrow the world comes to an end.
Can't take it with me. So remember, there was that one rich guy who got buried in his... I think it was his Cadillac, but
he did take it with him. I've heard women being buried in their automobiles too. I don't know.
I never.
It's
heard of
kind
that
of a it's,
women get buried with their jewels, not their cars.
No, there was one. She got buried in her car.
Ow.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think you're confused. But
no,
anyway.
I may be confused, but that has nothing to do with the veracity of the story, the anecdote that I'm trying to quote.
Yes.
All right. Here's an article talking about homes. Over 40% of nearly 2 million modified loans facing resets are underwater. That's a headline from Ms. Shedlock's Global Economic Analysis. And what they're talking about is... hang on just a second. Black Knight's April Mortgage Monitor shows almost 2 million modifications face interest rate resets, and 40% of those resets are already underwater. Now, what this apparently means is there are 2 million mortgages that are going to have rate modifications coming, taking place now or in the immediate future. And 40% of them, 800,000, are already underwater, meaning that they're paying a mortgage on a $200,000 home, because that's what it was valued at when they bought it back 5 years ago or 8 years ago or whatever. But the price of the house is actually, the market value of the house is maybe $150,000. The value of the house is less than the value of the mortgage. They are underwater. They're claiming that 40% of these that are going to see a mortgage rate modification, that's 800,000 of them, are underwater. And that means the amount due on their mortgage, again, already exceeds the market value of the house. In the past 6 years, a lot of homeowners whose home prices fell dramatically and came to be underwater simply abandoned their homes. People sitting there and saying, look, I'm paying on a mortgage for a $200,000 home, but it's only worth $150,000. This is crazy. And they walk, they leave the keys and they walk away. Now, I presume that the interest rate resets that they're talking about in this article, again, they say 2 million modifications, mortgage modifications, face interest rate resets. I'm assuming, they don't clearly say, but I'm assuming that these resets in the coming modifications will almost certainly cause 2 million mortgages to pay higher interest rates on their mortgage. I'm assuming this is the truth, and if it is, the 800,000 whose homes are already underwater are going to have increased interest rates and increased monthly mortgage payments, and it could be the straw that breaks some of the camel's backs. Some significant percentage of the 800,000 underwater homeowners, that doesn't mean they live underwater, Melody. It means their mortgages are underwater.
I got that out.
Well, I just wanted to keep, you know how I am. I like to explain these things to people so there's no misunderstanding. Some significant percentage of the 800,000 underwater homeowners might simply choose to abandon their property. Right? They're already underwater. They got a house that they got a mortgage for $200,000, and figuratively speaking, I'm just pulling the numbers out of thin air. The house, the market value of the house is $150,000, and now the payments on the mortgages may be about to rise. If enough homeowners look at this and figure that's it, I've had enough, and they abandon their homes, the result could be falling home prices, at least in some communities, which might push more homes underwater and trigger another round of abandonments. And the point behind all of this is that housing remains volatile and subject to falling prices. It's not happening everywhere. It's not happening nationally per se, but there are pockets where we can still see falling home prices. And the housing industry is not in a recovery on a national basis. We are still, it may be that people are buying automobiles, as you've described, but they're not yet ready to buy homes, all right? At least not in the same sense that they were in, say, 2006, 2005, 10 years ago. So.
Well, yeah, I don't think they're ready to go out there and, you know, dump their funds and to turn these homes as quick as they used to. I know realtors, they think the market is turning around. The real estate business here in State College, Pennsylvania, is brisk. I mean, I've seen homes come on the market, they're sold 2 weeks later. They have a big high turnaround or quick turnaround. But then again, you can sell anything as long as it's priced right.
Yeah.
And I've also seen homes in various other locations where these homes are ridiculously priced. And a lot of that comes from the realtors. They buy into the news they hear. They listen to mainstream news, and everybody's talking about the great the recovery. You were talking about the stock market's hitting all these highs. Things are improving. We still have an unemployment problem, but you know the economy really is doing well now that we're selling automobiles back to the same levels as we were prior to, you know, 2008, where we're, everything seems good, realtors are going in some locales saying, hey, your home is really valued at, hey, as it was back in 2005, so let's try and sell it at that level. And then, of course, it just sits there. And a new trick that these realtors do, they just, you know, these people will relist their homes. So it looks like, you know, they only have it on the market for 6 months instead of the year and a half, hoping to hold out for a higher price. So, mm-hmm. you know, again, and then you have the you know, these hedge funds that I was told by realtors where they're out there buying up these, you know, vacant homes, turning them into rentals. Of course, that is putting a stem on the value of homes. And you have these banks that are holding on to these assets, these foreclosed homes. So again, you have another industry that is polluted with illusion.
Yeah.
I mean, you really don't know what the truth of the matter is.
Things for sure, this is like the diamond industry. I mean, they mine tons of diamonds out of the ground, and they sell, you know, a fraction of that into the market. It's because if they sold diamonds according to the actual supply, if they didn't sequester part of the supply, price of diamonds might be, you know, a fraction of what they are today. Same thing with homes. So far as I know, the banks are still sitting on a large inventory of homes that were abandoned or foreclosed after the Great Recession started. And they're still sitting, which means the supply of homes is much greater than you might imagine. They're intentionally restricting the supply that's available to be purchased on the market. And because of that, because the supply is restricted, that helps to hold prices up, even helps to cause prices to rise. Huh? Well, that seems like cause for celebration, but you're still dealing with a market where the supply is artificially diminished. And that tells me, at least, that if that supply ever hits the market, prices of homes will go down. So there's that danger. And the big point in all of this is that the world understands. Prior to 2007, 2008, everyone knew you could buy a home. It'd be worth more next year and more the year after that and more the year after that. It was a great investment. You couldn't lose. And then all of a sudden we did lose. Because of that, we don't have the same confidence. We don't buy a house as an investment vehicle, most of us. We are buying a house now for shelter, right? Not because we anticipate the price is going to go up 10% a year from now until heck freezes over. We just buy that property, that house, because we just need shelter. And that being the case, we're less inclined to buy a big house.
But it is amazing how people really do believe their home should go up, you know, these outrageous prices. And if you bought a home 4 years ago, it should be worth a couple hundred and to, you know, to $500,000 more.
Right.
I learned a long time ago a house is a depreciating asset. Because by the time you upgrade, you fix, you replace, insurance and all the other costs that are involved in maintaining a home, you put just as much into it as much as it might go up in value unless we have a fluke market. And that's exactly what we had leading up to 2008. It was
a fluke market.
It was a fluke market.
I think it was an artificially stimulated market. You know, one of the things that interests me, I saw a report where Ben Bernanke was talking, back about 2006, and somebody quizzed him on what if the home prices go down, and he said it's never happened. On a national basis, up until the Great Recession, home prices had never gone down in this country on a national basis. They might have gone down in Cleveland. They might have gone down in L.A. or Dallas or something like that. We have different communities where it might go, where the prices may go down. But on a national basis, housing had never gone down. It was always worth more next year than it was this year, than when, and again, the following year was more yet. They counted on that And it was a fundamental premise for whatever they were doing with the economy. And they said, well, housing will never, that's the one thing we can count on. Housing will never go down. So we got that much is locked in for sure.
Well, thank you, Master Greenspan. Yep. You know.
That didn't happen. Didn't work that way. Surprise, surprise. We're going to take a break for commercials. I'm Alfred Addis, Kira with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. Be right back. Please stay tuned.
Have a heart condition and emergency rooms and medical doctors are not an option, you need our emergency heart attack kit. 5 concentrated liquid formulas enter the system in 60 seconds to protect your heart muscle, strengthen heartbeat, increase circulation, relieve pain, and make breathing easier. When seconds count, you want all the help you can get with our emergency heart attack kit. Easy to use and portable in a 1-pound compact kit for your purse, briefcase, or car. Call Apothecary Herbs now for your emergency heart attack kit toll-free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at www.thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis, on Financial Survival with Melody Cederstrom, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver, 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs. What's next, Melody?
We have a caller, Ivan, from Pennsylvania.
How many times
Hello,
do I have to take
Melody and Al. How are you?
Hi, Al. Hello? I mean, hi,
Al. I'm Al. He's Yvonne.
Yeah, you are, Al, and Melody is the one with the sweet voice.
Yeah. All right.
Okay.
And which one are you, Yvonne?
I'm Ivan Yvonne the Terrible.
All right. What you got for us?
I have a question. Yeah, yesterday you discussed about the heat impact of various power plants. You discussed the fossil units and also the nuclear reactors. And
yep.
You mentioned that nuclear reactors produce more heat than fossil plants. Can you tell me where the heat comes from?
Can I tell you where what heat comes from?
Well, you said that
the heat in the
nuclear
reactors?
Power plants produce more heat than do the fossil plants.
I didn't say that it produces more than fossil plants. That's not my argument. But my argument is this. Without being a physicist and perhaps being mistaken, nevertheless, it appears to me that when you take, if you have fossil fuels that you're burning coal, for example, at one point or another, they took carbon out of the atmosphere. It went into the trees. They put the trees underground. The trees turned into coal. We're mining it, and we're burning the carbon that was once in the atmosphere, and we're replacing it again. And we are not getting any more heat out of that carbon than was originally there, although it might have been there millions of years ago. They deposited that heat. It turned into coal. Now we burn the coal. We have the same amount of heat as was deposited. But what I'm speculating on, and again, I'm not a physicist, so I don't understand this for sure. It appears likely to me that when you have nuclear reactions in the, the nuclear reactor, those nuclear reactions generate heat from uranium, for example, plutonium, whatever. They're generating heat that would not have occurred in nature. Right. When that plutonium or the uranium is dispersed through the soil and we don't have the atoms lying right up against each other, I don't think they're generating the heat that we get out of the reactors. It's because we concentrate the producing heat that has been here before.
Containment. And then you have a totally complete solid loop where the water changes into steam in the reactor, comes out. It depends on if it's a pressurized or basically how the pressurized water reactor and the other ones are. My mind is blown. But anyway, they stay within a solid loop. And what happens is that the reaction within the core is very hot. That's correct. And the temperature goes much higher than let's say, in a solid, in a fossil fuel area, burning. But the steam is then goes the water goes through a heat exchanger which produces steam, and the steam goes through the turbine, and then it's condensed into water, and then it goes through the heat exchangers and comes back, and there is no release outside of the cooling water which goes through the heat exchangers and goes out either cooling towers or is discharged into a river. And that happens similar to a fossil plant.
You're saying that you don't think they're creating any additional heat.
No, not that it's exposed to the air. It's the heat is created.
Yeah, but you've got those cooling towers. I mean, you can see at least most, a lot of reactors. I don't know that it's true for all of them or even a majority, but they have those enormous cooling towers.
Yeah.
And that tells me that there's a lot of heat that's being dissipated into the atmosphere. That's what a cooling tower is all about. One way or another, getting rid of heat, cooling it down. And that tells me that the heat is being released into the atmosphere. Again, I'm not a nuclear physicist. I'm not a student of nuclear power plants, so I could be mistaken, but it does appear. You know, you can take the rods that you use in the nuclear reactor, and you just set one out on the ground all by itself, and so far as I know, there is no particular heat associated with that rod beyond whatever the room temperature might be. But when you take stack of those rods and you put them close together, that's when you start to generate heat that we would not otherwise have. So that's the point. From my perspective, it looks likely, but I don't know that it's true.
Yeah. Well, you have to generate we have protons and neutrons, which create the chain reaction, which brings those rods. Like you say, when you have the plain rod, you don't get anything out of it because it's more or less.
So it follows to me the same principle applies to where the uranium is spread out through the soil. The tunnels where they mine uranium are not hot. Right, it's not a hotter. Right. It's no hotter there than it would be in any other tunnel at the same depth. The uranium does not generate significant heat the way it's dispersed. But when we mine it and concentrate it and then put it in large concentrations, I think we start to generate heat that had never been here before. It's not like fossil fuels.
Right, you can go to coal mine, and it's the coal is not hot. I mean, touch it by hand.
No, I understand that.
So,
but it was. So but same. But the argument is that it's the result of heat that was essentially captured by the trees or plants, and they captured that heat, that sunlight. They converted it. They captured the carbon from the carbon dioxide. They turned it into tree trunks or whatever. They took the carbon that was in the atmosphere and one way or another concentrated it. It's a complex argument. Don't know what the truth of the matter is.
Because
one of those
we also exhaust the carbon from our mouth, when we breathe. When you breathe out, it's carbon is in your breath. So that goes into
so
the
I
trees, and it's part of the natural cycle, But
and we talked yesterday
so I just
about the deep.
To find out. I thought there was some because I worked with both nuclear and fossil plants. Natural gas, coal. The other thing is that if you want a solar heat or solar generated energy, you need the new power plants produce AC energy.
They produce alternating.
So you need the
alternating
current for that to in order for it to.
And what you're saying is that the solar only produces DC current, direct.
Right, DC current, air current compared to alternating current. Yeah,
I understand, but I'm just when we talked about it yesterday, we're just saying that the technology continues to advance and it will almost inevitably become competitive with fossil fuels. I mean, just commercially competitive with fossil fuels. I don't know how much difference there is right now, but I know they're closing the gap, and it almost has to be that way. As the price of fossil fuels goes up and the price of nuclear or solar goes down, inevitably there's going to be a time when solar is at least as cost efficient as fossil fuels.
The only question is you need a tremendous amount of acreage to produce, let's say, a nuclear plant runs at about 1,500 megawatt size, a coal-fired and natural gas runs at about 500 to 1,000, megawatts. And in order for you to have 500,000 megawatts of panels, you need 5,000 acres or something like that.
I don't know that solar will ever completely replace power plants.
Yeah.
You're going to need power plants for industrial applications and so on. But there's no question that we can put solar panels even now on homes. You got enough space on your roof to take care of your home with existing solar panels. Now, it's not necessarily cost effective yet, but nevertheless, it's not a size. Size is not the problem. Who knows? A third of your roof and maybe 10, 20% of your roof would cover it with solar panels, and you have enough electricity to run your house. That indicates that solar can, it doesn't require us to cover the earth with solar panels to produce enough energy, or at least it doesn't appear that's the way it's going to work out. Yvonne, what do you got for us on economics or politics?
Politics.
What about the Ukraine? Any news on the Ukraine that you'd like to share?
Well, the only about Ukraine is that the separatists, or the Donetsk and the Luhansk people, I think they are being supported by Russia, of course. And and one thing is, Russia is not non-communist. A lot of people thought that Russia, right here, Russia is not pure and it's non-communist. When Gorbachev was talking about Russia, being a democracy or whatever, he said this is for the ears of the people outside of Russia or outside of the Soviet Union. So, in essence, they just changed the codes from inside out, and they look more eligible to be Democrats than dictators or communists. So,
well, we all like to look that way, don't we?
Yeah. What I can see what the Ukrainians are fighting for, as I mentioned way back, that in 32, 33, there was what they called Holodomor, which they killed 11 million Ukrainians. They starved to death. And so they are not very, pro-Russia.
But it's not there. I've seen one report that thinks that much of the trouble they have with Ukraine is that Chernobyl is located in the north side of Ukraine. And the problem they had with the Chernobyl nuclear power plant self-destructing back, is it close to 20 years now? I'm not sure how long it's been, but it's been, I think it's 18, 19 years, something like that. Some people think that imposed a problem on Ukraine that it has not been able to overcome. It's hard to say what's going on there, but Ukraine has been a failed state. And from my perspective,
they made it a failed state.
Yeah, I think they are. For whatever reason, I don't know what all the reasons are, but they are to some degree a failed state. And if that's true, the rest of the predators in the jungle will pile in to feed off the carcass the same way they'd feed off a water buffalo that just became old, sick, whatever, rolled over and died. The predators are there. They're gonna strip it to the bones. And in the end, Ukraine is going to split probably. It'll fracture into multiple entities. Some will be with Russia. Some will be Ukraine. Some will be, who knows, part of something else. Hard to say what's happened, but it's a failed state. And they're, to my mind, is a fundamental problem. It invites predation from outside sources.
Yes, it does. The question is, you see, Russia kept Ukraine, since it was part of Russia. I mean, none of the states, so part of Soviet Union, had any power or any type of intelligentsia to be developed as they do, in Western Europe and so on. Because they kept them dumb and happy, the sheeples,
It's good to be dumb and happy, but it doesn't last forever. I think we've all been dumb and happy at one point or another in our life. That's why they have alcohol. Makes us dumb and happy. But later on, you get smart. The following morning, you get smart and unhappy. And you begin to realize, that wasn't such a good idea going out and getting drunk last night. It felt good at the time. We get that. It surrounds us. It's part of life. We're prone to do stupid things. It's unfortunate, but it's part of our species. It's part of our makeup. And it's really astonishing, amazing, and dangerous. We have extraordinary technologies. And they are being run that are designed by brilliant people, but are being operated by a bunch of dummies. And it's we don't necessarily have people that are capable. The great technology don't necessarily have, on average, the capacity to use that technology, and the result is trouble. Yvonne, we've got to thank you for your call. We're out of time for this segment. Going to take some commercials. I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Countries have denied internet access for their people during civil strife. The FCC seized in-use commercial shortwave frequencies right after the September 11th attacks. No one communication system can be depended on to be there when you need information. You need choices. You need a KU band free-to-air satellite system from AVR. The AVR system includes a receiver, an LNB, and a 75-centimeter dish. All you need to get on your own is the coaxial cable. The system is delivered to your door for $149.99. That's right, delivered for $149.99. That's the shipping and the system, $149.99. Call 541-225-4659. That's 541-225-4659. Or visit AmericanVoiceRadio.com and click Satellite System.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. What's next, Melody?
And I want to remind the listeners to make sure they visit our website at dgscoins.com, DGS for Discount Gold Silver Coins, COINS.com, and to make sure you buy all your gold and silver here at Discount Gold and Silver Trading. We continue to offer the low, low prices, in the lowest in the industry, quality product, and fast shipping. There is absolutely no reason in this whole world it should take 6+ weeks to get your product. It shouldn't take 4+ weeks to get your product, and really it shouldn't take 3+ weeks to get your product. I mean, sometimes there are delays for whatever reason, if it takes a long time for your payment to come here, but overall, never ever do business, and I don't care who you're doing business with, it shouldn't take that long to get your product. Anything can happen. They're playing with your money while you're waiting for your product. Our prices are some of the lowest in the industry. I continue to shop my prices to make sure we remain competitive. And with what we do with our prices, a lot of our commissions go right back into supporting various programs that help educate not just about gold and silver, but what is truly going on. Dr. Stan is a very important person, and Lori Roth and other folks that we support. So those commissions are important, and we try very hard to earn your business, and that is something that's not found anymore. We don't play gimmicks. We don't play games. We don't do, you know, the novelties or things like that. We're concerned about you protecting your financial assets, your financial purchasing power. So give us a call, 800-375-4188. Today, Steve Forbes came out with a book written, co-author, I guess, with Elizabeth Ames. And he talks about the U.S., a new warning that the U.S. faces an economic catastrophe due to the Federal Reserve's loose dollar policy, and returning to a strict gold standard is the only way to avoid disaster. Now, we all know who Steve Forbes is. He's an insider. ran for president in 96 and 2000, was looking to overhaul the tax system, flat tax, nobody wanted it, and so forth. And but here he is, an insider, coming out and saying, hey, you know, President Obama's money team for the stagnant economy, high prices, declining mobility, and big government. That's what's going to be happening. This is what's in your future. So, and we discussed, Alan, I mentioned during the break, we're not going to go to a gold standard prior to the disaster. So, again, another warning to tell you a disaster is on its way.
Well, the other point is this. If Forbes is correct, and I believe he is, he's saying we're not going to avoid some sort of an economic catastrophe unless we go to a gold standard. And I have no doubt that this government is not going to voluntarily go to a gold standard until after we have a catastrophe. All right, there's a problem. But it doesn't mean that you and I and the audience has to go along with the government in this matter.
Exactly.
When you start collecting gold on your own and you start buying your own, you are simply saying that's very nice. The rest of the world may be so stupid. The government may be so stupid. We're going to have this catastrophe, but I do not wish to be part of the catastrophe. I'm going to anticipate the time, the day, the moment when the world says, gold, give me that gold, and I am going to have some. I'm not going to be one of the people who's screaming for it. I'm going to be one of the people who has it. And as such, even though there's an economic decline and possible catastrophe that's going on around me, it's not necessarily going to impact my home and my family to the same degree that it would if I were out of gold. When that dollar goes down, if you don't have something to replace it, to substitute for it, you know, you're going to be in that catastrophe. You aren't going to have any choice. That's what's going to happen. And if Forbes is correct, and I believe he is, then it just follows that, okay, the whole country is not going to go to gold before we have, because they just, the Federal Reserve and the government is not, it's virtually impossible that they will voluntarily give up the fiat dollar. And that's what's going to have to happen, because they can't simply come back and say, oh, guess what? We've decided to price fiat dollars at so many dollars per ounce of gold. We're going to back fiat dollars with ounces of gold. What's the problem with that? Why can't that happen? And the answer is that according to some sources, there's something like 17 trillion U.S. dollars that are being held overseas. And as soon as we say, well, we're going to redeem our dollars in gold, well, guess what's going to happen to those $17 trillion? They're going to come swarming into this country like a swarm of locusts come pouring into this country. They can't go to gold with the current dollar while they have all these dollars sitting overseas. There has to be a collapse. There has to be a catastrophe where we wipe out the dollar and essentially tell all the people that are holding those $17 trillion, well, good luck with that, all right? Because we ain't paying anything on them because we're broke. Wipe out those dollars. Then we can start a brand new system of currency that's backed by gold. But we will not have the current dollars. They're not going to just come out and say, oh, guess what? We've decided to back the current U.S. dollar with gold. Can't happen, because there's too many of those dollars out there that will come swarming back in this country. Take gold and leave. Won't happen. So there's got to be some sort of a monetary collapse before we go back to gold and silver as a basis for our monetary system.
Agreed.
You better agree, Melody.
But it's not. I mean, it's good to have, you know, someone who, you know, of his status.
No, I understand that.
He pays any attention to it, comes out and says, hey, you know, this is, and he's critical of the Federal Reserve. He's critical of what has happened. And, you know, it says, hey, you know, the Federal Reserve should only have two tasks, keeping the dollar fixed to gold and dealing quickly and decisively with panic. They shouldn't be trying to run the banking system and the economy.
Because I understand that.
So
I understand the theory, but inevitably,
yes.
Once you set something up like the Federal Reserve,
great.
And you have an election coming in November this year, all right? People in positions of power are going to go talk to people in positions of power at the Federal Reserve and say, look, why don't you just push a little extra money out, and it'll help us get reelected. Come on, where's the harm? And people at the Federal Reserve, oh, what the heck? They'll go along, what the heck? How could it hurt? And they'll pump a little out. And once you get on that track, it's impossible. It's not impossible, but it's extremely unlikely that anyone will voluntarily get off. And they keep doing favors, and once you get in the habit of doing favors, then you must do favors because you've got to hold that economy together because you've stimulated it artificially. That's what happens. It's like the Fed's tapering on the QE, on the quantitative easing. Once you start pumping all this extra money into the economy, you are going to create an imbalance that will not be easily resolved. We talked about this yesterday, where we pointed out a number of people are saying the models, the economic models that they use to predict what the prices and returns on bonds are going to be next month, a year from now, whatever, the models are no longer working. Economic models that they've used for, who knows, 20 years, maybe more, they don't work anymore. Why? Because somebody pumped all that extra money into the economy. It went someplace. If the Federal Reserve pumped it in there. We didn't earn it. We didn't really make it. It's artificial, and it's like we're talking to Yvonne. You know, people like to be dumb and happy, and that's why we get drunk. But there is a moment when you can't drink anymore. You have to face the hangover, and you realize this was dumb. You know, it was a lot of fun last night, but it's no fun in the morning. With nations, we go through the same thing. It just doesn't happen overnight. It may be that one generation, even two generations, can get by being fat, dumb, and happy. And they can play the fool and be drunk and sing and laugh, and it's a great time. But inevitably, the nation comes to a moment when one generation has to suffer the hangover. And from my perspective, it looks like we're approaching that time. Really, we're kind of in it right now. I mean, the recession we've been in since 2008, it's the beginning of the hangover. Is it the big hangover or just the little hangover? Remains to be seen, but odds are we're headed for that. We're headed for that difficulty, that potential calamity, where the dollar finally says, oops, it's worthless. And that's the way we're going to rob the creditors, right? That's the way we're going to wipe out the $17 trillion that are sitting overseas. And that's what government will do. They'll say, well, it's time to rob those guys. Make that $17 trillion worthless. We'll just declare that the dollar is no longer viable currency. It'll make it difficult in this country, but we will wipe out $17 trillion in debt. One fell swoop. All we got to do is just cancel those dollars and come up with new dollars that are backed by gold. But we can't back the current dollars by gold because there's too many floating around. So, in fact, here's one, Connecting the Dots by Eric Sprott. And he makes one of the, he's talking about the supply of gold in the world right now. And he asks, why is Germany's repatriation of their 674 tons of gold taking so long? As of March 2014, only 69 tons had made their way back, a pace of less than 5 tons a month. Well, it goes to what is our supply of gold, and it goes to how much gold is really in the United States Treasury. We supposedly have 8,200 tons of our own gold, plus I have no idea how many thousand tons of gold that's owned by foreign countries that have been stored in the United States, placed here for safekeeping, but there's evidence to suggest that they've been selling Germany's gold. It's not here. It's not the reason they're only getting 5 tons a month back is because our government secretly sold it into the market. Italy, we have their gold. Ukraine allegedly shipped, they had something like 100 tons. They gave it to the United States for safekeeping. Ha, ha, ha. Well, Ukraine can probably kiss that goodbye.
The reason Germany can't get its 674 tons back is more than likely that it's not available. And if that's the case, how are we going to create a new currency that has gold backing? And the only way we can do it, if and when the time comes, is we're going to have to price that gold so high that 1 ounce of gold, it won't be worth $1,300 an ounce or even $5,000 an ounce. It might have to be $25,000 per ounce or $50,000 an ounce, in part because the treasury has been looted, or at least that's the strong probability. With Germany's repatriation 5 tons a month at that rate, it'll take about 11 years to repatriate all of Germany's gold that's being held here in the United States. That can't be. If I go to some place that's been storing my money, they've got my money at the bank. I go down there and I say I want to withdraw my money from the bank account. The bank says, we're going to give you $5 a day until you get all your money out. It should only take about 11 years. It's not just a misfortune for me. It's evidence that the bank itself is not funk. There's something wrong at the bank if it takes it 11 years to return the money I deposited. There's something wrong with the bank. That's the implication of Germany's slow repatriation. 674 tons that it's owed, but we're only returning 5 tons a month. Man, there's something wrong. And it indicates that there won't be enough gold to back a U.S. dollar, a gold to back the U.S. dollar, unless the price of gold is extraordinarily high. So, we are headed for difficult times, interesting times, and all you can do is prepare as best you can. You look at it, you try to understand what's happening. And to the limit of your ability to do so, if you agree with me that we are coming on difficult and dangerous times, then you do what you can to prepare. On the other hand, if you think happy days are still here again, well, get drunk and maybe you'll never have another hangover. We are out of time, however, Melody.
Yes, we are. We had wanted to get to talk about Bergdahl today, and I just want to let the listeners know if you we'd like to hear your thoughts. If you want to send me an email at questions@dgscoins.com, questions@dgscoins.com, and we'll give out our 800 number tomorrow if you'd like to call and join in on the conversation. We'd like to hear your comments.
All right, folks, thanks for listening. We'll be back tomorrow. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer. Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay.
Ain't it sad?
And still, there never seems to be a single penny left for me.